to the ballgame.
Take
me out to the ground. Buy some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever go back, cause we'll root for the Cubbies. If they don't win, it's a shame. But it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Hello and welcome to the Transcending CRM Podcast, a show where we explore how the Salesforce ecosystem has impacted the careers of fellow trailblazers and the businesses that have leveraged dynamic growth from the platform. This podcast is brought to you by Silverline. Silverline is a Salesforce digital transformation consultancy headquartered in New York City, specializing in financial services, media and entertainment, and healthcare industries. I'm your host, JP Owens, Managing Director of Banking and Lending at Silverline, along with my co-host, Elliot Spence, Principal Consultant at Silverline. Hey, Elliot.
JP, how are you doing? Excited to be back on the show, recording another great episode with, I'd say he's a pretty exciting guest. So I'm looking forward to what our guest has to talk about today and looking forward to getting started with another episode.
Yeah, this one's definitely long overdue. I think we've had many events with our guests today, and this is our first time kind of having a general conversation on the podcast. So excited to have Jim Collins join us today. Hey, Jim.
Hey, JP. Glad to be here. Finally got the invite. I'm excited. Excited to be here with you and Elliot.
I've been telling him to send it to you for a while. He just kept pushing back on me, but you know, finally we're here. Excited to have you on, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah, today we're joined by Jim Collins, Senior Director, Financial Services Industry Advisor at Salesforce. Jim is an executive with over 34 years of business experience, including 27 years in the banking industry. He also served as the Senior EVP and Chief Administrative Officer of Customers Bank for 12 years. Jim, we're finally excited to have you on the show today. It's definitely been long overdue. Can you take a minute to tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your current role at Salesforce?
Sure, JP. And that introduction makes me seem really old. So 34 years of experience, that's a long time, but excited to be here with you guys today. My role here at Salesforce started here over 2 years ago, as you mentioned, after coming from about 27 years in the banking industry. And over the past 2 years, we've developed a financial service advisory team that really focuses in on different verticals within FINS. And basically, our community bank and credit union sector is one of the areas that I really have taken to heart over the past couple of years, and really try to talk about strategy and roadmaps and talk to community banks and credit unions all across the country. And working with great partners like you at Silverline to put on certain events in order to drive not only awareness, but really drive true discussion. So I'm excited to be here today to talk more about that with you guys.
Well, yeah, and I think the industry background is exciting, but I think what we are most excited and kind of thrilled to have you on is that wonderful rendition of Take Me Out to the Ballgame now 2 years in a row, which I think our banking summit or our Silverline summit in Chicago, the thing people most look forward to is seeing you kind of kick it off and take everybody through that.
Well, I got to tell you, JP, I think we've increased attendance year over year just because of that song. So hopefully we'll continue to grow next year as well. And I think we've brought the Cubbies luck every time we've sang it. So hopefully we'll continue to do that.
If only both teams could lose every time we go to that game and it's Cubs-Cardinals. We'll have to get a Reds game in here this upcoming year.
Well, the Reds are hot. So a lot of good young talent on that Reds team for sure.
I was going to say, but the time we're recording this, hopefully we bring the Reds some luck because they need it right now. We're on a 6-game losing streak. Not looking good for my red legs.
But like I said, a lot of young talent. And I think the good things are to come. And especially, you know, they're going to make a good playoff push here, I think, at the end.
Yeah, I think so, too. So the Chicago Summit that we've done, this is year two. Like you said, we increased attendance. I think we had about 100 people attend this year. And the previous year was maybe 50 to 60. And we definitely evolved the topics and the content based on popular demand. So you mind talking a little bit about some of the trends that we discussed as part of your keynote and some of the sessions we hosted a few weeks ago in Chicago?
Yeah. And JP, you know, I'll start off with, you know, the attendance. And when I look at the attendance overall, what I've seen for the past 2 years is banking, credit unions, different asset size banks and credit unions, geographical dispersion, not only from the Midwest, but across the country, really coming together in Chicago to leverage the power of what I call the ecosystem, just as you mentioned before. So really trying to get the brain thrust of not only Salesforce, but of Silverline together to drive some of those trend discussions. And what I saw over the past couple of years, especially this year, was the interaction between banks and credit unions talking to each other. You know, we talk about the four major trends, and I've been talking about this all year. Economic uncertainty is driving a lot of strategic decisions in banks today. Organizational optimization is top of mind for banks today, how to drive operational efficiency because of what's happening in the economy. Customer or member expectations are driving a lot of the decisions that banks and credit unions are focused in on because everybody's expectations are changing, especially with digital transformation. And lastly, where do people put their money, their infrastructure investments? How are they investing in technology? But how are they investing in technology with a purpose? Whether it's driving efficiency, driving growth, or really just changing the way they do business. So those were some of the top trends that we talked about and that I think everybody really got into a heated, not heated, but a good thorough discussion about during the banking event this year.
And I think that's one of the things I like the most about the banking summit is you bring all of those different clients, all the different prospects, all the different leaders from the banking industry together, the financial services industry, and you have those discussions. And then it's, you know, in between the sessions, everybody gets, you know, 15, 20 minutes to kind of break out, and it's the side conversations. And there's so many people having, you know, in-depth discussions around all the topics that you just talked about. And you don't get that at a lot of other places because, you know, many of the other events are so large, it's hard to get together and have those targeted conversations. And it's one of the things I like the most about what we just did up in Chicago.
Yeah, and Ellie, no, I think the power of being part of the ecosystem is really bringing people together and trying to create that mutual success. Not to really talk about our Salesforce values, but, you know, one of our critical values is really customer success. And in order to drive that is bringing customers and partners together to drive that success. I've seen it not only at the event, but I've seen it in user group discussions. You guys have been part of my credit union user group discussion that I have throughout the country. We have over 60 credit unions that come together on a monthly basis that just talk about their issues. They talk about their challenges. They talk about roadblocks. And everybody's trying to help each other solve those problems in order to create mutual success. So the power of the ecosystem, what I'm seeing today, is really coming together and working together. You don't see that cutthroat environment in what the banks and credit unions that were at our event or what I'm seeing in the marketplace today. People really want to help each other succeed because it's good for the industry and it's good for the consumer segment across the country.
Yeah, and I think the key thing is not that there was no product discussion, really. Like, I think we were diving into, here's an industry trend, here's a theme, here's a problem, here's ways some of your peers have solved it, and let's show you different ways you could look to accomplish it or go back and get started. And I think all three of us have a unique point of view on this, because I think we all started in industry as buyers of the technology or implementers of the technology on the industry side, and we had to drive these conversations and really come back with ideas. So hopefully others are feeling that same way when they come to some of these events we've been co-hosting, is I'm going to come in here and I'm going to learn from others, and I'm also going to come back with some ideas on how we can solve some problems quickly.
Yep. It is about problem solving. It's about strategy, and, you know, it's about short-term versus long-term investments, right? What are you trying to solve? What's your fire drill today? But you also have to make sure you keep that long-term in mind. And I think that's when people listen to each other and they really, you know, breed off of each other and their success, they're thinking not only short-term, but more importantly, long-term investment strategy.
And that's a good segue into my next topic I want to discuss a little bit. Can we take a little bit of time to talk about how the ecosystem has evolved to enable product owners and executives to network and enable their teams to transform their businesses leveraging the Salesforce platform? And we were talking about the banking summit we just had in Chicago. And Jim, you were talking about basically your roundtable, your meetings you have with credit unions on a monthly basis. But what other ways are you seeing that the ecosystem has evolved to really enable those product owners and these executives to network together?
Yeah, I think events like the ones you guys put on are critical for success. And I think as we head into this time of year, we all know that Dreamforce is coming our way, right? So Dreamforce is another opportunity for everybody to come together, Salesforce and our partner ecosystem, and bringing customers and prospects to educate. And I think education is the critical piece of what we're seeing today and what Dreamforce is going to be about this year. You know, our mantra right now at Salesforce is AI plus data plus CRM. But what does that mean? So what does that mean to the community bank? What does that mean to the regional bank versus the credit union? How is artificial intelligence playing a role? And most importantly, how are they leveraging their data? right? Their data is critical to their success, but do they even know what their data is telling them? And can artificial intelligence help them? And can they deliver that through a CRM solution like Salesforce to create that engagement internally and externally? But when we talk about the ecosystem and we talk about what's next, I think education is critical, especially as the artificial intelligence, no offense, but buzzword is all around us today, right? But what does that mean to our banking customers? And I'll just give you an example, if you don't mind me getting into the weeds a little bit here. When we take a look at, you know, we talked about economic uncertainty as one of the key trends. You know, one of the things that we're seeing from a best practice standpoint within the ecosystem is really trying to help drive net interest margin or NIM. And that's all stemming from data and analytics. So the five critical things that we see banks focusing in on are customer segmentation. But it's interesting because when you ask a bank today, well, have you segmented your customer base? Who is your customer? And they'll tell you one thing, but their data is telling you another. So customer segmentation is critical for success, but I'm not sure everybody's been able to clearly define that for their organization. You know, we always talk about cross-selling and upselling. That's just about deepening relationships. But one of the critical data points that I think the best in class are getting to is really trying to define the customer lifetime value, the value of that customer. What's Elliot's value versus JP's value? I'm sure very similar, I'm sure. But what is that value to the organization? And then, as we all know, in the beginning of this year, we dealt with a lot of deposit situations because of some of the bank failures. So churn prediction and retention of deposits, how are those analytics playing a role in your organization today so that you can predict and execute? And lastly, the biggest thing that we're seeing is those who do it well in our ecosystem are monitoring performance, not only across business lines, but definitely across business lines, but down to the individual banker level. So those are some of the things we're seeing with data and analytics. And that's driving a lot of the education that I think we're going to see and you're going to see coming up at Dreamforce here in September.
So Jim, on those topics, I'd like to ask you to put your old banker hat back on, because I think we talk about these themes all the time. And you also mentioned AI. So put yourself back at the bank as an executive and you're talking about solving these themes. I mean, obviously the technology is a piece of the puzzle, but what were you doing to better enable your teams or your managers to go out and execute and really follow through to help bring some of these key themes to life to make sure you were doing the best you could with the data you had or the tools you had?
Yeah. And JP, I think, you know, a lot of people try to start with technology, but you actually have to start with strategy and vision, right? And if that's not clearly communicated throughout the organization, it doesn't matter what technology you're trying to implement or enable, it's not going to work. So clearly defining that strategy and vision across the organization is the critical number one point. The second point is you have to deal with organizational change management. We always talk about the mantra people, process, and technology. It all does start with people. And if people aren't willing to change or listen to the analytics or what the data is telling them versus what they think they know, you're not going to be successful. So strategic, clearly defining the vision, organizational change management, and then leveraging the right technology to enable that strategy and to enable change. That's where I've seen, that's where we've been successful in the past, but that's where best in class organizations have really driven success and really have, I would say, you know, from a return on investment of their technology, really have doubled that because they were able to define that upfront.
One of the things I wanted to ask about real quick, because you were talking about a little bit ago about, you know, we have Dreamforce coming up. So this episode will air probably a little bit before Dreamforce, but for anybody listening, if it's their first time, especially as like a, you know, bank executive or a product owner, what is a plan of attack they should have at Dreamforce? Because it is a huge event, and you look at the Dreamforce, like, it's not really a logo, but it's a logo. You know, it's really highlighting AI. The AI is bold in the title, and you have data cloud and everything. So what should an executive or a product owner do when they're going out to Dreamforce if it's their first time? Because it's, like I said, massive event. There's so much you can take in. What should they be focusing on?
Yeah, great question, Elliot. It's definitely overwhelming. I mean, I went to Dreamforce probably 3 to 4 years as a customer. And then I've went the past couple of years as a team member. And my first couple of years as a customer, boy, I was shell-shocked. It was a largest event that I've ever attended. You know, over 100,000 people in one small area of San Francisco. But over the years, I've learned that, you know, one of the critical things is don't miss the keynotes, right? And even if they're, you know, the overall keynote, even if it's not specifically for your FINS industry, go to it because you can learn more from other industries that you can apply to yours. The second is make sure you do go to the FINS keynote. The FINS keynote will drive home what are the best practices that we're seeing in financial services across the country, actually across the globe. So that's critical. And then number three, you got to go in with a plan and a schedule. So do your homework prior. There's actually a segment that you can take a look at all of the financial services banking specific sessions and make sure that you do your homework and give yourself enough time between those sessions that you want to attend to actually walk to the next session so you don't miss it. And then, of course, it's finding partner opportunities like Silverline. And what is Silverline doing during Dreamforce to bring like clients together and attend those events, whether they're breakfast, lunch, or dinners? Those events is where you're going to actually create a new network for yourself of executives of like kind, so that when you leave Dreamforce, you will have that network in place as you move forward in developing and enhancing your strategy for digital transformation. So that's how I would attack it. I've learned what not to do, and I think I've learned what to do over the past 7 or 8 years. And I think it's a great opportunity, but definitely an educational opportunity over 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on, you know, catching the keynotes and getting in any kind of banking sessions, because that's the first time I went out there as a customer. You know, I was learning as an admin, so I packed my schedule with, you know, trying to get different training and hands-on experience, which is great as somebody new. But the most I get out of it now is catching, like, I like jumping into like roundtables and listening to people talk about, okay, as a bank or as a credit union, as a financial services institution, what's on our roadmap? How are we solving for these different troubles that we have, or how are we building efficiencies? And it really helps just, you know, me think about different ways that we could do things here at Silverline with our clients. And I love hearing that from different people, whether it's a keynote or a roundtable. So glad you mentioned all those.
And Elliot, one of the best banking sessions you're going to see is actually the one I'm hosting. There's a theater session at 4:30 on Wednesday at Intercontinental, at the Intercontinental Hotel, for growing relationships, building efficiency, and creating mutual success in banking. So just a plug for myself as we go through this.
I'm sure I'll be there. And if anybody's not attending in person, I did want to mention you could watch all these or stream a lot of these on Salesforce Plus. So, you know, for keynotes and things like that, even if you're not in person, yeah, that's a great place to tune in. I wouldn't miss any of the keynotes.
I'm shocked, Elliot, that you didn't mention to not overpack your suitcase on your first Dreamforce. I think I recall you having about an 80-pound suitcase on your way back from your first one from all the prizes and swag.
That's because I'm a winner, and all I do is win prizes when I'm out there. Actually, just the first time I went out there, yes, my suitcase did weigh too much on the way home, and that's with mailing some of it home already.
So the moral of the story is bring two suitcases, one empty and one full.
Absolutely. I know people do that. I know there's people that do that for Dreamforce. I do not. I should, though.
On the Dreamforce topic, too, I know one thing I don't think we really hit on. We talked a little bit about some of the roundtables and ways to do it. But if you plan ahead well enough and work with your Salesforce counterparts, your AEs, your RVPs, to talk about, like, hey, what else should I be thinking about? Like, there's opportunities for potentially people like yourself, Jim, and partners like us to bring things to you. And I know we did a couple of sessions last year in kind of a private space and walk people through road mapping and how to think about their strategies. So whether it's something that's published and you're signing up to participate in a larger event, but if you plan well enough ahead, there's ways to potentially get some curated content kind of brought to you while you're there to try to make it a more efficient experience as well.
Yeah, definitely, JP. And I think, you know, working with like Silverline and Salesforce together to bring like-kind executives is critical because, as we all know, banks and credit unions are going through their strategic planning season now, right? As we head into September, October to finalize their budgets for their next fiscal year. So talking about strategic roadmaps, seeing what people have been able to tackle in the short term, but still impact the long term, and listening to each other and like success stories actually is more enlightening than some of the keynotes, to be honest with you. So that type of opportunity, whether it's over a breakfast, lunch, dinner, or just another social setting, that's the impact that Dreamforce can really have on an organization.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned budgeting there. So let's pivot back again to your time as an executive. I'd like to have you share a little bit more insights around how you would manage investments and evaluate the tech investments as well as the business challenges they were hopefully being aligned to solve, knowing that the technology was just a piece of the puzzle. But let's talk treasury for a second. I mean, treasury management to Silverline, it almost feels like the year of treasury conversations for us, where years ago we'd implement FSC and more for clients, and it would often start in commercial banking. And commercial is not just commercial lending, but I think we all know credit was king, and that was really where all the focus would go. But this year, it really feels like people are trying to solve for inefficiencies around their treasury, not just the selling, but the bundling, as well as the implementation of services and ongoing support. So can you speak a little bit to how you would look at your business challenges or potentially the opportunities to optimize your programs and how that would play into your budgeting process and how you'd make different investments in technology and think about those investments from project costs as well as the potentially ongoing support and maintenance or the cost for the licensing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll take it in a couple different facets here. First is the strategic planning season for an upcoming budget season. And then there's those mid-year adjustments that you make. But for an upcoming budget season, you know, it's interesting. I owned all of operations and technology at our bank as we continued to grow. We started out when I started there, $250 million in assets, and I left, we're almost $20 billion in assets. So big growth spurt over a 12-year time period. And during that time period in the beginning, you know, everybody always thought of operations and technology as an expense, right? So you're an expense. So let's let the revenue generators talk about how they're going to generate revenue, and then we'll make sure that your expenses are in line. And I think after a couple of years, everybody realized we're not the expense, we're the enabler to your revenue. So when you take a look at investments, can a dollar of technology produce $2 of revenue? Can a dollar of technology produce $3 of revenue? And if they can, we should be doing that all day long, right? All day long. We should be enabling that and leveraging technology. Now, the type of technology can change, or you can leverage a platform approach like Salesforce, where you can plug and play different facets depending on what your revenue strategy is. You're experiencing a lot in the treasury management area today. The reason we're experiencing that is because of the economic trends. You know, if loan growth has stalled a little bit because the interest rates are higher, banks need to look at non-interest income, fee income, like treasury management services, to drive revenue and to continue to grow their organizations. So with that, those strategic discussions that people are having here in September, October, are going to be talking about fee income. And how do we drive fee income? And how do we leverage technology to drive that income? But I would highly advise anybody who's running a technology organization and is at the table for these strategic discussions to make sure that your executive team realizes that technology is the enabler for revenue. It's not an expense, it's an enabler. And how to position that accordingly so that you can take on more budget accountability and responsibility to help your organization grow. And I think treasury is just one example, and you're going to see other examples as we move forward from what I'm seeing in specialty lending, adding in different LOS opportunities. We always talk about onboarding and new customer acquisition, deposits, deposits, deposits. How do we bring on new deposits, and how do we do that efficiently and effectively and cover the right segment? So a lot of people can bring on a consumer deposit. Can they bring on a commercial deposit? Commercial deposits are a different beast than consumer deposits. So these strategic discussions that banks are having, and you're investing in that technology, you're looking for a platform that can do more than just one single point solution. And that's another thing to take a look at. How can you reduce your single point solutions and go to a platform discussion to reduce your overall total cost of technology and continue to enable your organization to grow? So growing efficiently, growing with platform solutions is how we thought of that approach as we continue to, you know, pretty much go from 250 to 20 billion in assets over a time period. But if you don't mind me continuing, if you get a mid-year discussion point, that's really strategic planning for a new calendar, a new budget year. From a mid-year perspective, it's really trying to either put out fires or create sense of urgency. And when you're investing in a sense of urgency, you want to have a strategic partner like Salesforce or Silverline to be able to come in and say, this is what you need to implement today. And this is what we can get you up within this quarter in order to execute your strategy. So a lot of in-year cycles are basically putting out fires and creating a sense of urgency. And those investments are just as critical as your strategic year planning, because things can change and economic factors can change.
Well, yeah, and to the point on the mid-year kind of urgency or fires, this year it's been treasury services and trying to make that more efficient. It's been data, get me more data, help me understand more what's happening in my portfolio, especially related to deposit outflows. And I think the other piece is just personalization. I need to better understand the experience my clients are desiring. So we've had a lot of very quick, I'd say, cycles with clients where it's like, hey, I have a new project I need to spin up and get started now, because these are some things that have been real big pain points as we've been trying to better understand what's happening in our portfolio and try to be proactive versus reactive. So I appreciate the context there around the mid-year versus the standard cycle, because I think a lot of this stuff has been kind of hitting on those trends you've been talking about this whole episode. Is these things are all top of mind for everybody. It's just, what's my execution plan look like for all of them, or at least one of them in the short term?
Yep. And I think also, JP, you know, when you look at data and analytics, the C-level position that's been getting more into these conversations is actually the CFO. The CFO is coming to the table wanting to know more about data and analytics, and what is data telling them about their potential loan losses in the future, their potential opportunities for growth. So it's interesting, these mid-year discussions that you typically would have with a technology leader or a revenue generator is actually now happening with a CFO. And the CFO is understanding the power of data and analytics to help drive their decisions and balance sheet decisions as they move into what potentially could be a tougher year in 2024 than 2023.
Yeah, 100%. And those are some of the discussions, even during projects when I'm implementing for different clients, that all of a sudden we have a meeting with either a CFO or the line of business CFOs to really get an idea of how do we better understand the cost of acquiring a new client, or the cost that's taking us to onboard a different loan or an opportunity. So definitely those discussions are happening more and more today than I have seen in the past.
Sure. You've also seen that, you know, from an analysis, that there's a cost of doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So when you're with clients that are trying to make decisions mid-year or heading into a budget cycle, they're saying, well, we're just going to hold off. Well, there's a cost of waiting. There's an opportunity cost for not acting. And I think the one great thing that I know Silverline does, as well as with Salesforce and our business value team, is create that business case and create that value segment so that a CFO and a CIO and a COO can really see, well, there is a cost of doing nothing. And if I wait 6 months or 9 months to make this decision, I'm going to be behind from a revenue perspective. I'm not going to create operational efficiency. And the experience for both my customer and my team member is not going to be where it needs to be because I waited. So there is an opportunity cost of doing nothing, but I think the way we show value together, I think is critical for success.
100%. And I think this next question could potentially play into this even more, but what advice would you give to yourself if you had to go back and implement Salesforce or nCino, you know, from the beginning again? So what are some of the important lessons that you have learned over the years when it comes to implementing Salesforce or, you know, nCino within Salesforce?
Yeah, great question. And I think that, you know, how long ago was it? It's almost 9-10 years ago when I first implemented Salesforce and then nCino. And I think if I knew back then that it had more to do with people than technology, I would have been more successful. And really the critical thing is, as I mentioned before, about clearly defining your vision and your strategy, but more importantly, getting buy-in in the organization and making sure that everybody's on the same page. This isn't a technology project. This is a transformation of how the organization is going to change the way we do business internally and externally. And because of that, you need everybody to buy in. You need your executives to be on the same page, and you need to make sure that once they're on the same page, you're able to drive organizational change through the ranks of your organization. And then lastly, every technology has its strengths. And if every technology, if we leverage those strengths and maximize those strengths and not try to customize it into something it's not, you're actually going to be more successful. You know, Salesforce is a platform approach. nCino is an LOS. And can be leveraged for a specific loan operating system and loan process. Leveraging both and leveraging their strengths, you will maximize your return on your investment. And I wish I knew that, you know, 10 years ago, what I know today. But really, Elliot, I think the critical thing is it does all start with people. It starts with buy-in. It starts with organizational change. And then making sure you leverage the technology for what it's there for and leveraging it to its fullest capability.
So, yeah, I'm on board. I'm trying to get out, like, we really need to have that change management episode here, because it's every time we're recording with somebody, it comes up with change management and how important it is. Organizational change management. We start the project and we're building all this cool stuff. We're building all these efficiencies. And then it's like at the last part, we're planning for change management, but I don't think organizations truly realize just how critical it is to get that buy-in from everybody. And I really like that you talked about, and I always call it like executive proficiency. You know, who is the executive sponsor? Who is the executive champion? And are they truly bought in? Because you can have an executive sponsor, but if their name's just on there as a sponsor and they're not truly on board of, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's how we're going to do it, and here's how we're going to drive that change, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be very difficult to get that, to get that buy-in from everybody across the organization as you're doing this implementation. So all really good points that you made there. You know, when I started in 2016 on Salesforce, those are all things that I've definitely learned over the years, but I wish I truly understood and grasped them when I was first implementing Salesforce years ago.
No, I appreciate that. And I'll just add one more piece to it. I think the second or third implementation we had on the platform, we actually also started an ongoing corporate communication of success on the platform and constantly communicating on our all hands calls. It was always on the agenda. It was always part of the agenda. Our CEO always measured, hey, here's a digital transformation update. We did this on financial services cloud. Here's our success. Oh, and by the way, here are the KPIs we measure on a quarterly basis. And the one other facet that I think I learned a third time around was make sure those KPIs are in place and make sure there are layers of KPIs. Number one, actions and behaviors. You know, how is it going throughout the organization from an adoption standpoint? Number two, how are you impacting the results, the sales results and revenue results of the organization? And then number three, you know, we're all competitors. Everybody wants to know how do you stack up against your peers in the industry? You know, how are you from a revenue growth standpoint? How are you from an operational efficiency standpoint at the bank across the street? And is our technology driving that success? So communication and then KPI and measurement on a consistent basis is also critical for the continuation of a digital transformation.
Well, I think to make a point too, if you don't have maybe the organizational change management strategy in place and you're a product owner or an admin or a BA who's getting started within your organization, I think the one thing you can do is there's a grassroots effort that can be successful here. I know in the past, like we've seen people go market to market, really try to build the trust of the business, help them understand what else they could be doing on the platform, really understanding your business processes and trying to help advocate for what the platform can do. Jim, back to your point on the platform strategy, is there's so much it can do besides some of the basics you might implement in your first implementation. And as you get more comfortable with it and you can bring the business leaders along to say, hey, I know you're doing this way today, but in a future release, we could do this, this, and this to help bring that process out of these inboxes, out of these spreadsheets, or really drive it straight through without having all that swivel chair activity. So even if the organization isn't from the top down driving it, there's still an opportunity for someone in the middle or a kind of front line to drive that upwards. It just takes effort, takes consistency, and really being an advocate for the tools you currently own.
And it takes to be a good listener. So listening, that person in the middle can listen to what the issues are and put solutions in place and then say, and prove it. Say, listen, here's what your issue was. Here's your problem. Look how we solved it, and continue to do that. And then that builds momentum, just like you mentioned.
All right, Jim, I think last question we like to ask all guests, and I appreciate you coming on today, and I'm sure you're going to have a great story for us, but we like to find out a fun fact or potentially an almost unbelievable story or accomplishment from every one of our guests. So we'd love to hear from you. What do you got for us today?
So besides my singing capability of taking me out to the ballgame, besides that one. I didn't win The Voice or America's Got Talent. So, okay. So it's interesting. You know, we talked about my longevity in the business world, 34 years, but 40 years ago this year, so 1983, I was actually a team member and a part of the 1983 high school national championship football team out of Berwick, Pennsylvania. We're a small town. You talk about old coal region football in Pennsylvania. Now you guys can understand that from Ohio, but the Berwick Bulldogs, when I was a junior, we were actually ranked number one by the USA Today. We were a small town of about 10,000 people in Pennsylvania. And actually, we were named national champion three times, 1983, 1992, and 1996. Coming from that small town, you know, where you had 10,000 people, there were 10,000 people at the game on a Friday night. So you talk about Friday night lights in the Northeast. That's where I came from. And this year is actually our 40th anniversary of claiming our first national championship. And I'm very proud to continue to be friends with a lot of my teammates on that team over the years, over the last 40 years. So wanted to share that story with you. I'm sure you'd appreciate that from a competitive and football standpoint.
National champions, huh? That's really cool. That's really awesome. What's the name of the town again?
Berwick, B-E-R-W-I-C-K.
Berwick, okay. Pennsylvania. Yep.
Yep, our head football coach, George Curry, up until maybe last year, was the winningest coach in the state of Pennsylvania with over between 400 and 500 wins. And guided the Bulldogs to three national championships.
Wow. So what you're saying is if you didn't pivot and you know, become a banking executive, you likely would have been in the NFL and maybe coaching.
No, I'm definitely not saying that. Definitely not.
What position were you, Jim?
I was actually a defensive back. So defensive back. And, you know, my senior year, we had 13 or 14 of our team members actually signed to play college football, including myself. So coming from a small town, you know, you see those Friday Night Lights stories, you know, trying to get out of a small town to continue to build your professional career. Football was our way out. And football actually built a foundation for a lot of us to become executives, doctors, lawyers. So from a small town to create that type of professionalism, it went a long way.
So in other words, the movie All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise is based off of you.
It's close. It's close. Okay. You know, Tom, Jim, it's very similar. Very similar.
Well, really appreciate you coming on the show today, Jim. And maybe a couple more quick plugs before we wrap up. So you want to plug your events and your speaking engagements coming up at Dreamforce?
Yes. And as I mentioned, it will be at the Intercontinental Hotel on Wednesday, September 13th at 4:30. We will be focusing in on community banks and credit unions on growth, efficiency, and creating mutual success. So looking forward to that, as well as partnering with Silverline. So JP, I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, actually, Silverline will be spending a lot of our time at the Clancy Hotel. We will have a lunch on Tuesday, September 12th, where we'll be hosting one of our client stories talking about their transformation. So we'll have that big event happening. And then we're partnering with you the morning of September 13th to host a credit union breakfast. So those are two big ones to be looking out for, and reach out if anybody's interested and wants to participate.
Excellent. Look forward to that.
All right. Thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review. To learn more about Silverline, you can subscribe to the Silverline blog at silverlinecrm.com or follow on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook at SilverlineCRM, one word. Thanks for joining today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.